Chapter 25 Ends and Beginnings. Alpha and Omega, the first and last, each within the other. The Apocrypha Terra. Date unknown. Lights came on. The heavy cell door opened. Titus Prato stepped into the chamber. Seated upon a metal bench and shackled by the throat, ankles and wrists to pins set in the rockrete floor, Narek of the Word looked up, but did not speak.
"So, friend, we begin again," said Prato. "Will you say more today?"
"There is no more to say," replied Narek.
"You are hard to probe, word-bearer, and hard to open," said Prato. "I am impressed. Others would have broken days ago."
"There is nothing in me to break," said Narek.
"Did you slay the Lord Primarch Vulcan?" asked Prato.
"Asked and answered," Narek grumbled.
"For the record, today."
"No, I did not, though I would have if I possessed the means."
"Who did?"
"I don't know. I can only offer the conjecture that it was the immortal human known as John Grammaticus, or perhaps his unknown confederate."
"We have no record of a John Grammaticus on Macragg, or—"
"I told you," said Narek. "Where he passes, he does not leave traces. I do not know what happened to him, but his aim was to slay Vulcan."
"What was the weapon he used?"
"I do not understand it. A spear, forged from the power of the Emperor."
"And this is what he employed?"
"Perhaps he did. Perhaps it was Kurz. Kurz was there too."
"What happened to Kurz?" asked Prato.
"I know not."
"Were the Eldar present? There were clear signs of Eldar munitions."
"No. Grammaticus's confederate used those weapons, though it was told to me that their masters are Eldar-born."
"Anything else?" asked Prato.
"Nothing else," said Narek of the Word.
Prato stepped out of the cell and closed the hatch. It slammed shut. In the gloomy corridor outside, one of the lowest level spurs in the fortress of Hera, the avenging sun stood, waiting for him.
"Has he changed his story?" Gilliman asked.
"There is not a hint of variance, my lord," Prato reported. "He maintains this strange tale of immortal assassins and curs. I cannot tell if it is true or false, but it matches the physical evidence, and from my read of him, he believes it utterly."
"He does not lie."
"He appears, my lord, to have no reason to do so."
Gilliman shook his head.
"I don't understand. He's a word-bearer, reviled by our legion more than any other. He's on Macragge, alone, after Kalth, yet he seems to display no guilt or shame or deceit, not even fear."
"I think he is a very singular being, lord," said Prato. "I think perhaps he is a little similar to Warsmith Dantioch, a good man drawn by fate on the wrong side."
"He's an ally?" asked Gilliman.
"Not like the Warsmith. Dantioch has come over to us and renounced his legion. Narek is still dangerous. He sees us as the enemy, and he remains true to his legion. But he is loyal."
"What do you mean?" asked Gilliman.
"Each day, as I ask my questions to occupy his mind, I probe deeper to unlock the hidden truths. He is loyal to his legion, but it is a loyalty to the spirit and foundation of his legion, not to what his legion has become. I see two things clearly."
"And they are?"
"First, he is remarkably single-minded, determined. There is a fixed purpose in him that is almost frightening to read. The second thing is what that fixed purpose is. He wants, with an urgency that is alarming, to kill your brother, Lorgar. It is all he lives for."
"Is this an act?" asked Gilliman.
"If it is, it's the best piece of psychic conditioning I've ever read," Prato replied. "What do we do?"
"Come back tomorrow and ask him the same questions," said Gilliman. Keep doing that every day until we have the truth.
And then, Lord?
And then, said Gilliman, I will order his execution as a traitor and a heretic.
He woke up and knew the pain of life again. Without even opening his eyes, he knew that he was on a craft world. He could smell the Eldar. He sat up. The chamber was small. He was on a cot which, like the rest of the room, was made of wraith bone. It glowed with an inner light that he found nauseating.
"You brought me back," he said.
"Oh, I had to, Johnny," said Daemon Prytanis. "Never leave a man behind and all that."
"I mean, to life."
"Yeah, that was their choice. After what you pulled, Johnny, I think they want you alive enough to punish you soundly."
John sighed. "Vulcan?"
"He stayed dead. Your trick didn't work. Plus, it killed you. It was stupid, Johnny. Technically, you completed the mission, but they know what you are really trying to do."
"Why? Because you told them?"
"I didn't have to," Daemon Prytanis replied. "Gahet's waiting for you. Slaudar, too. They want to know who you've been talking to. They want to know where you're getting these ideas from. They want to know what else you might have done."
He paused. He rubbed the dressings on his throat and jaw.
"Basically, they want to know how you've betrayed them," he said. "And why?"
"Because I'm human," said John Grammaticus. Prytanis laughed.
"Funny, actually, because that's true now. That crazy stunt, pushing your life energy into Vulcan, it took everything out of you. It took everything, Johnny. They brought you back to life, but it's the only one you have left. They can't do it again. You're not a perpetual anymore, Johnny. You're just a man. You've got one life remaining, and they're going to tell you exactly how you're going to spend it."
The door behind Daemon Prytanis hummed open.
"They're ready," he said. "Shall we?"
The deep vault was silent. The memorial flame fluttered on its stand. Zaitos knelt beside the golden casket. The sound came and went so quickly that Zaitos thought it was in his imagination. He waited, listening. It did not come again. He waited longer, willing it to return. It did not repeat. It had merely been in his imagination. For a second, he thought he had heard a heartbeat, the dun-dun of a single heartbeat. But no, it was wishful thinking. Zaitos of the Salamanders bowed his head and resumed his morning vigil. Real space tore open like a gut wound. A bloody, mangled figure tumbled out, lean limbs flailing and left red stains on the mountain snow as he rolled down the slope. Behind him, the real space tear bulged and spasmed, the torn and wet mass of Ushpetkar, choking on its own black ichor, shuddered and died, collapsing backwards into the warp and closing the tear behind it. At last! Dead at last! The combat had been far too long and far too grueling. How many days, how many weeks had it lasted in that no-place, no-time wasteland of the Immaterium? Almost dead, cadaverously thin and soaked wet black from head to toe in demon blood, Conrad Kurz got to his feet. He was shaking with cold, pain, and hunger. He looked around with his wild, black-within-black eyes, struggling to identify his location. He was high in a range of mountains, huge mountains, snow-capped. A single toxic star shone in the storm-ruined sky. His visions began to flow again. They ran through his demented mind like shadow play. They showed him that a city lay not far off, perhaps just a fortnight's trek through the mountains. It was a great, golden city on a coastal plain,
watched over by a mighty fortress. Magna Macrag Civitas. His visions showed him the cheering crowds, the streets full of people, the great triumph of the Declaration. He saw the Lion and Gilliman alive after all, alive after all. He saw Sanguinius between them proclaimed as master of mankind. They were trying to save the Imperium by shoring it up on Ultramar and the 500 worlds and declaring it refounded. Kurz began to laugh. It was nothing. It was pitiful. It was an empty gesture made by desperate men obsessed by notions of nobility. It was just another empire for him to raise to the ground and annihilate. He started to walk. He left many bloody footprints in the snow behind him.